watching for the Detroit effect in cities around the country.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Retired workers for the city of Detroit late last night voted to lower what they expect in pension benefits. This is an acknowledgement that the fiscal crisis in that city has trumped what Detroit legally contracted to provide. The retired employees agreed to cut pensions by as much as 4.5% and curb future cost of living increases. The vote marks a milestone in that city's efforts to emerge from insolvency, but have Detroit's troubles made it harder for other cities to borrow money? Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer takes a look.
When a community needs to build a new school or a jail, it sells bonds on the municipal bond market. The bonds are a city's promise to pay. If one city doesn't pay up in full, does bond money dry up for everybody else?
So I think it depends a lot on the cities.
Kim Rubin is a public finance economist at the Urban Institute. She says some Michigan cities have to pay a premium in the bond market because they're in the same state as Detroit. Many of them have the same problems. Ditto for some Rust Belt Midwestern cities, says Rubin.
So other places that are seeing similar demographic trends in terms of aging populations and declining populations.
What about cities without these problems? They can still sell bonds, but they have to work harder. According to Lisa Washburn, she's managing director of Municipal Market Advisors, a bond research company. She says investors are justifiably skeptical.
So, you know, you want to know ahead of time what type of risk you're taking on.
Still, Washburn says there is a lot of demand for municipal bonds once investors decide they're safe. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Now let's check the stock markets. The 100-share index in London is up 0.8% right now. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong rose 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. Changes to the cost of a school lunch are on the way for thousands of school children across the country. Schools are opting in to what's called the community eligibility provision, which makes lunches free not just for low-income students, but for all kids in low-income districts. It's part of the National School Lunch Program. President Obama signed the program into law in 2010. Last year, 4,000 schools in 11 states participated. This year, the program expands to the rest of the country. From the Wealth and Poverty Desk, Marketplace's Noel King reports.
The Dallas Independent School District has just qualified for the community eligibility provision. Dora Rivas is with the district. She says lunchtime could be stressful for low-income kids.
Sometimes they worry about not having enough money to pay for their meal.
Dallas and other districts are eligible as long as at least 40% of their students qualify for free lunches. But if the school is feeding all students for free, won't it cost the district more? Rivas says no. Until now, it paid to process thousands of families' applications for free and reduced lunches. Now,
our funds are actually going to producing the meal instead of all of the paperwork.
The National School Lunch Program, which the community eligibility provision is part of, costs the government nearly $12 billion a year. Jim Weil with the Food Research and Action Center says that's a reflection of the difficult economy.
Most of the kids in the free and reduced price meals program are kids whose parents are working.
On an average school day, Weil says 21.5 million kids eat a free or reduced price lunch at school. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
We see lots of official data here suggesting the U.S. economy is getting stronger, but there are still about 3 million Americans who have been out of work for 6 months or more, the long-term unemployed. Just being without a job that long can make it harder to persuade an employer to hire you. Now, on top of that, researchers are finding that when some people do finally get jobs, they don't last long. Marketplace's Annie Baxter looks at some reasons why.
A few years ago, Lori Barkley Struckman lost her job as an office administrator at a company in the Twin Cities. For more than 6 months, she couldn't find work, which made her part of the long-term unemployed. Then, when she did land work...
I had 5 different jobs, but nothing full-time. It took 26 months before I got a full-time job again.
That rocky road to recovery is familiar to researchers like Alan Krueger. He's former White House chief economist. Krueger looked at census survey responses of Americans who were unemployed for at least 6 months between 2008 and 2012. When those people were surveyed again more than a year later, only about a third had landed jobs. And of that group, Kruger says only a small percentage were working steadily full-time.
The long-term unemployed, when they do find work, is often inconsistent. It's often part-time. They often find a job that doesn't last very long.
They're in a situation where maybe they're feeling desperate to get a job.
Mary White is a job counselor with the nonprofit Hired in St. Paul.
They convince themselves and the new employer, yeah, this is a good fit. And it's not.
And White says sometimes unemployment can leave a person's finances and marriage in shambles, making it harder to hold down work once it does come around. Lori Barkley-Struckman knows that from an earlier round of unemployment that coincided with her divorce. She says it was easy to get distracted when she returned to work.
You're still thinking about all the other turmoil that's going on in your life. It's hard for you to concentrate and keep yourself focused. So that is a real task to just make yourself go, okay, you've got to just, you're here to work, give it up.
But with a good job now, Barkley-Struckman is able to help pay for her daughter's upcoming wedding. She's keeper of the bridal gowns.
Now, the only reason you can see these is because you're not coming to the wedding.
For the long-term unemployed who can't find jobs, full-time or otherwise, research suggests many just stop looking. In St. Paul, Minnesota, I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Right now, Netflix stock is up 2.75% in pre-market trading. Its profits were announced after the market closed yesterday, and they were strong, more than doubling. It got that $1 a month price increase through for many customers. The company is also looking to expand more aggressively overseas. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.